Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi David Levenkruz discusses Parshat B'Shalach. There's a handout for this podcast, so check it out and print it out if you have the time. Rabbi David Levenkruz is a faculty member at Pardes and serves as the Pardes Director of Special Programs. And now, Rabbi David Levenkruz.
Thank you, Larry. You know, ladies and gentlemen, in these times that we're living in now of financial insecurity, I know for myself nothing could sound better than being able to walk outside every day and know that my food for the day is there and totally taken care of. And indeed, this is the situation in this week's parasha, when the Israelites who were wandering in the desert would go outside and would collect the manna, the man, every day. And yet, rather than being totally thankful and thanking God and Moshe for that every moment of the day, in fact, we know from the Torah that what they did is complain. What we're going to do today is we're going to try and understand what the manna was, why is it that Am Yisrael complained about it, and we're going to use it to try and understand something about the nature of people and the nature of life and the nature of food. What's interesting, and we're going to go according to the source sheet that many of you have in front of you, what's interesting is that Shmot and Bamidbar differ in the way that they see the man. If you look in Shmot, it says that the man was like fine frost, that it was white, and that it tasted like honey. If you look at Bamidbar, it says that the man was like coriander seed, that its color was pearl-like, and that in order to eat it, you had to grind it, and that it tasted like oil. So you really have two very, very different descriptions over here. In one case, it's white, nothing needs to be done to it, and it tastes like honey. The other one, you actually have to do something, it tastes like oil, and it's like coriander seed with a pearl-like color. Naturally, this is the type of contradiction that both Bible critics and classic scholars have a field day with, and Bible critics will tell you that Shmot comes from the P document, the priestly document, and Bamidbar comes from the J document. These are people who believe the Torah comes from different sources. Not surprisingly, the Gemara goes in a very, very different way. And we have two delightful, but nevertheless very, very serious discussions in the Tractate of Yoma, in the Babylonian Talmud, as to how it could sometimes be called bread, sometimes be called oil, and sometimes be called honey. And Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Chanina says, Lenarim lechem, for youths, it tasted like bread. Leskenim shemen, for older people, it tasted like oil. Letinokot dvash, and for infants, like honey. Presumably little babies like things that are sweet. I mean, we know kids like things that are sweet. Youths, na'arim, need bread, which gives them energy. And older people, like oil, perhaps it goes down nicely. Whatever it is, there's a powerful, powerful idea going on that the man wasn't this straight substance that tasted the same for everybody, but that the good Lord and the good Lord's munificence not only provided man, but even provided different tastes according to different people. There's some idea that taste is important, that the physical, the experiential, when it comes to food, is important. And a little earlier in Yoma, we have this idea explicated even more. It says in the Torah that it was like ketam leshed, which means like cake. Amar Rabbi Abuha. Rabbi Abua says, you shouldn't really think of it as being shad cake, but rather shad meaning breast. Ma shad ze tinok to'em ba kamatamim, af aman kol zman shi Yisrael ochlim oto motzim bo kamatamim. Just as an infant, just as a baby, when he or she drinks from the mother's breast, has different flavors according to what the mother has eaten, so too, Am Yisrael, when they had the man, it tasted different according to where they were. And there seems to be an impression over here that it depended less on the man itself and more on the person themselves. The person could get out of the man, could get out of the manner, taste that they would like. And other people say it doesn't mean leshad like a breast. It doesn't mean leshad like a cake, but leshad like a shade, like a demon. Ma shed ze mitapech lekama gvanim, just as a demon changes into different shapes, af haman mapech lekama tamim, so the man changes into many different tastes. Again, this very, very powerful idea that the man changes tastes according to either the person or the nature of the man itself. The very, very powerful idea that a shed is something malevolent. It's not a nice pastoral idea, the idea of it being a demon. Similarly, shed, on the one hand, is very, very sweet. It's a mother and a breast. On the other hand, there's something sexual about it. The idea of a person eating man and it being like drinking from a woman's breast, there's certainly something sexual about it. And this is something that we will return to later when we try to understand the nature of the complaining. Why is it that people complained? So we've discussed how the man had different forms in the different books of the Torah. We've discussed how the rabbis understood this as meaning that the man had different tastes according to who was tasting it, because how we taste food and our individuality is important. If we look on the second side of the source sheet, we see that the Israelites are beginning to complain. They say, you know, what's going on? We want some meat to eat. We want fish to eat. We want cucumbers. We want melons. We want leeks. We like onions and garlic. It sounds like a very good Mediterranean diet. Very, very good for cholesterol. First of all, it's fascinating. I think one has this phenomenon sometimes. When one leaves a place, one gets nostalgic for things that one never really liked when one was there. I mean, the one that I think of most common is immigrants from the West who come to live in Israel, who you would think would be so happy. I'm talking about Jewish people who come to Israel, who are maybe very, very happy when December time comes around and there isn't the total onslaught of Christmas, which many people find very, very hard. And instead, what very often happens is that Olim, people who've come to live in Israel, find they're actually missing Christmas, that it's actually part of their culture in a way that they didn't really know. And they become nostalgic for something that never really was theirs in a way. I would doubt whether they actually, the slaves in Egypt, were eating fish, cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. I think they might have had a little bit of it some of the time. There's something very powerful going on. They're missing something which they never really had. And our question really is, what is it? Why is it happening that they're missing it? Just as an interesting aside, the way that the Gemara saw it is that these are all foods that pregnant women don't like eating. And this just heightens the idea of the man being in some way like a breast. Even if one thinks of one, it looks like as being, you know, little small white grains, one can see how people might think that they have a breast-like quality to them. So again, the question that we left with is, what is wrong with the man? It tastes like whatever you wanted. It's freely available. You don't need to do anything for it. Why are they complaining? So again, we're back in the Gemara of Yoma, which is the place where this is decided. And they say that the man had all the different tastes of the foods, except these five. For some reason, man was not able to have these five, perhaps because pregnant women don't have them. And then it says something very, very interesting. These things had taste, ta'aman v'lo mamashan. They had taste, but not substance. In other words, they had lots and lots of different tastes, but the texture was all the same. It was like tofu, or as my kid said to me, yogurt. You can have lots of different flavors of yogurt, but in the end, you're eating yogurt. And this brings up something very, very powerful. And that is part of what we enjoy about food is texture. We know you can take the same food and you can spend and you can grind it up too much, or you make it too soft and it doesn't have the same enjoyment that you might have otherwise. So too over here, we see the food didn't have texture. A student of mine said to me yesterday, it's a little bit like wine. But they say with wine, when you drink wine, you need to have all your senses involved. Your taste, your touch, you taste it, you look at it, you smell it, you touch the wine, you drink it, that all your senses need to be involved. And so too with the eating of food. Food is not just food. Food involves pleasure. It's an experience. So too, we want to have the substance as well. When we look a little lower down to Yoma 74b, we have some other reasons. We hear that Rav Ami and Rav Asi are talking. Chad Amar one says, Eino dome mi she yesh lo pat besalo, le mi she ein lo pat besalo. You cannot compare one who has bread in his basket to the one who has none. And this speaks about the fact that, you know, really every single day, the people who went out in the desert had to trust in God. They weren't sure that it was going to happen the next day. This is a miraculous occurrence that is happening, but you can't be sure that it's going to happen every day. There's a certain amount of security that one just doesn't have. There can be something very beautiful about trusting God all the time, but there's also something very, very hard about it. So the first reason is it didn't have texture. The second reason is that it wasn't quite the same as getting it for sure. Also, I think the idea that you didn't have to work for it has significance. There's something very, very powerful about working for one's bread. In Genesis, we told, in Bereshit, we told that we need to work for our bread. There's something powerful about looking at the food on the table and being able to say, hey, wait a minute, this is food that I worked for. So there's also that aspect of it. There's not the feeling of the involvement. Finally, we have Rav Yosef's opinion, who said that you need to be able to see what you eat in a similar way to that you need substance. So too, we have this idea, again, of all the different senses that you need to be able to see what you can eat. And he says that blind people eat without becoming satisfied. Part of the satisfaction of eating food is it's a complete audio-visual sensory experience. And if you don't have that audio-visual sensory experience, what happens is that you are not satisfied. Interestingly, very, very interestingly, Rav Yosef himself was blind, so he knew what he was speaking about. So we have all different ideas. We have the multiple senses idea that food, to be enjoyable, has to touch on all the senses. We have the idea of trusting God not being what I want, and also the idea of wanting to work. And finally, we have an idea which my kids brought up when I asked them this question, and that is they said that there was just too much choice. If every single time you sat down, you could have whatever you wanted, it was just too much choice. It's too hard to decide. Should it be like ice cream? No, should it be like chocolate? No, should it be like meat? No, should it be like fish? What? Too much choice is involved. And it's interesting, in some way, I think that these three ideas, it goes back to the idea of the different ages. I think that adults, people, would be most affected by the fact that you have to trust in God all the time and the work is not involved. I think babies might be very, very affected by the texture of what a food is like. And I think that youths or teenagers may be affected by the idea of too much choice. So we can see that the Israelites had reason to complain, but I think that there's more than that. It's more than just not being satisfied with what is going on. I think that they complained for a number of other reasons. One is that they're living in a world of absolute miracles. They're living in a world of complete and absolute miracles where wonderful things are happening all the time. And sometimes it can be overwhelming. In fact, complaining about something is a way of making it more normal. I think sometimes it's smachot that people complain at a simcha, even though everything is very, very beautiful. It's almost a feeling of being overwhelmed. I have everything I want, and therefore I complain about it. I think there's a second issue as well going on, and that is a student brought up to me that she could never get over the fact that people complained in a soup kitchen. That people would complain even though they would be given food. They'd say the food isn't good or you haven't given enough of it, whatever the case might be. What I just said reminds me a little of Woody Allen's quip, where you had two women complaining in a restaurant, and the one said, oh, the food in this restaurant or the food in this hotel is terrible. And the other one says, yes, and in such small quantities, really showing how people never seem to be satisfied. However, in a way, if we go back to that soup kitchen, what we're saying over there actually is that these people still have dignity because they're able to complain. In some way, I think complaining shows that I still have dignity. I still am able to say, hey, wait a minute, I expect certain things. And maybe for the Israelites in the desert who are complaining, they're able to say, hey, wait a minute, Even though we're getting all these wonderful things, it's not completely what we want. And the fact that they complain, I know I'm being very charitable, but the fact that they're able to complain shows that they still have dreams of things being the way they wanted. But I think there's yet another reason that they may have complained. And that is that food creates community. We spoke earlier on about the sexual elements or the malevolent elements. How do we deal with these type of things? By creating community. One of the most powerful ways that we create community is with food, is through breaking bread, through sharing bread, through thanking people for cooking food. These are all different ways that community is created. And the fact of the matter is that they didn't have this. And this is a major source of complaint. It's very, very interesting how this is dealt with in Shmot Rabbah, where they speak about the same idea, but in the following context. It says, come and see, it's talking about Revelation. Come and see how the voice went forth to all of Israel, to each and every one in keeping with his particular capacity. To the elderly in keeping with their capacity, to young men in keeping with capacity, to the little ones in keeping with their capacity, and to the women in keeping with their capacity. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina said, if you are astounded at such an assertion, then draw the relevant inference from the manna, which came down from Israel varying in taste, in keeping with each Israelite's particular need. To young men it tasted like honey, to the elderly it tasted like wafers made with honey, to sucklings it tasted like milk from their mother's breast, to the sick it tasted like fine flour mingled with honey, while for the heathen it tasted as bitter as linseed. Now if the manna, which was all of the same kind, changed into so many kinds to provide for the particular needs of each individual, was it not possible for the voice, in which there is such divine strength, speaking of God on Sinai, to vary according to the capacity of each individual so that no harm should befall them? What did Revelation do? Revelation created community. What type of community did it create? Not a totalitarian community in which everybody has to have the same, but it's a community in which people shared something. They shared the manna. They shared the word of God, but each of them heard it differently. Each of them heard a different word of God. Each of them responded in a different way. Food, revelation, in a powerful way, what this Midrash is telling us is that food can create community. Food can be differing for different people. We all know that when we cook different foods for different people. That food, working for food, appreciating the taste of food, appreciating the texture of food, sharing food, this is a powerful way of what we are as human beings, and if we don't have it, we complain. Ladies and gentlemen, may we all be blessed to eat lots and lots of food that is good and nourishing, that gives us what we need, that we work for with dignity and have jobs with dignity, and that we share with others. And may this not only apply to food, but to the communities that we create. May they give us dignity, may they be sharing ones, and may they be communities which do not treat everybody exactly the same, but appreciate the great value in this world of each according to their own want and need. Shabbat shalom to us all.
Thank you, Rabbi Levenkurs. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.